Hey guys, it's Renee from Throwing Down with Renee and Misha. On today's podcast, we discuss Aljamain Sterling's win over Peter Yan in the co-main event of UFC 273 and whether he's earned the championship respect. Plus, we speak to UFC commentator Paul Felder about UFC 273, Iron Man competitions, and much, much more. Let's get into it. Talking about this controversial split decision between Yan and Aljamain Sterling, but you feel like Aljo won, yeah?
I do. I feel like Aljamain won. It was a close fight. Don't get me wrong.
It was close. Are people saying that they thought that Yan won because of the last two rounds?
Yeah, but I just, you know, I thought after round one that Aljamain had that one. You know, I kind of mentioned it earlier in the show too. When you are a judge, does it matter to you how mm-hmm. somebody gets the top position? Does it matter if they initiate a takedown and you know they want it and they're going for it and they get it? Or is it the same if somebody kind of like lands in top position or you know, the other person kind of turns and gives their backup, you know, maybe they were initiating the takedown and then, you know, as you're moving, you kind of end up on top? Like, do those right. things factor in when the fight is very, very close? I mean, it begs
It's pretty
to
crazy to me that
question.
You don't, that like, that we don't know that we don't know what the judges take into account for that. Like, that seems crazy to me.
We don't.
Should it not be more black and white? It's very scary that it's so
very
gray
subjective.
Area.
It's very yeah. subjective how the judges are seeing. And even, you know, the punches that, you know, how they think they land and how they you know, how they assess how powerful they actually were and things like that. It's very scary to go mm-hmm. to a decision because you really don't know.
Yeah.
You know what they're supposed to judge on, but that's still such a small scope of what actually happens inside of a fight.
Of course.
And you don't really know. You know, so somebody, for instance, we were talking about Mackenzie Dern's style and how she's kind of like chaotic and all over the place. Like, if, you know, do you like that? Does a judge like that forward pressure, or do they like somebody who's a little more tight and clean and moves and sticks? And I mean, they're both striking. But so it comes down yeah. to preference, really. It's very objective.
Very. Yeah. I would hate to leave something in their hands. It's horrifying. But it was left in the judges' hands. And somebody who didn't agree with that was Dana White. Let's hear what he had to say.
Co-main event, obviously a back and forth title fight there. A lot of people had scores all over the place. I'm just curious kind of maybe how you had it scored and what you thought of Aljamain's performance tonight.
Yeah, I thought that the judges blew that one. I thought I had it 3-2 the other way. I don't know how you guys scored it, but, you know, I guess it's all in however you score that first round.
How does a fighter react to hearing Dana White say that afterwards? Like, what do you think Aljo thinks when he hears Dana say that?
He's probably kind of pissed, but I'm sure that he'll play it off. Like, you know, I don't care what anybody has to say, including Dana. I'm the champ. If you don't like it, come and take the strap from me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the attitude you've got to have, because regardless, you know, he did win. A lot of people felt like he won. And, you know, if you're Dana and you really feel that way, then perhaps, you know, another rematch is what's on the docket. Maybe that's what's warranted. Mm-hmm. We'll see how the future holds, but it was such a close fight that I'm not sure, you know, stripping the champ of his belt is exactly what needs to happen.
Yeah.
I thought Aljamain looked so impressive, and, you know, he went out there and did what he said he was going to do. And, you know, it's unfortunate for Peter Yan, because I think in the first fight he was pretty dominant, you know, didn't dominate every second, but he mm-hmm. was definitely appeared to be the better man that night. But not Saturday night. You know what I mean?
Right.
Aljo
yeah.
showed
yeah.
up and he really did some work. And, you know, overall he had a stronger control game too. You know, I mean, being on the back, he was like a little backpack. I mean, he just could not.
Oh my God, honestly,
get him off. And that's that is like the most dominant position. That and mount, which is impossible to hold mount for that long. But Even holding the back for that long against someone like Petr Yan, who is extremely explosive and scrambly and crafty himself, to be able to maintain, I mean, that's some of the best back control I've ever seen, ever, in the history of the sport.
Literal human backpack.
Yeah, like you might be able to say like Damian Maia, you know, is up there in that and probably has better rear naked choke finishing ability because I think nobody probably does it better than him. But I mean, I'm talking about just positionally being able to hold that, especially against someone like Piotr, was very impressive. And I think people are underrating how good that was just because the position was held for so long. People were forgetting like how hard that is to do that. When do you ever see anybody do that? And especially honestly, how high everyone was on Piotr. Like everyone thought he was just going to go out there and win. So to see him be held in that for the, you know, for inside two rounds, it was wild. And I think because of that, he was closer to getting, you know, getting this fight finished at any point. I thought his striking looked good. But you know, Piotr's game, I certainly don't want to take anything away from the man or talk bad about him or say, you know, he looked really good as well. Just, I don't have a problem with the decision. I think that it was the correct way to score it.
Well, it looks like the plan may be for TJ Dillashaw to get that next title shot, and Aljo seems to be on board for that. Let's hear what he had to say.
I think I showed what I'm capable of and where my mental fortitude is, where it's at. You're going to need a lot more than that to break me and make me quit in there. So I don't know if that's what he's thinking. I don't know. If anyone's mentally weak, it's that guy. The guy needed steroids and EPO to catapult his career to even win as many fights as he did in the UFC. So his whole UFC tenure is tainted. So I can't wait to punch him in the face. That would be somebody I would enjoy punching. He's got good skill, but the guy's a cheat. He's dirty. And I'd like an opportunity to slap him up and we can figure out who's number one again.
How do you feel about Aljo and Dillashaw in that situation?
Sorry about that, Renee. I lost you for a second.
That's okay.
Tell me again.
How do you feel about Dillashaw and Aljo if that were to be the situation next?
Oh, I really like that fight. I love that matchup a lot because Dillashaw is going to be able to push put pressure on the wrestling game that I think Aljo really, where he really shines. You know, he's really long for the division, so his striking is interesting too. They call him the Funk Master because you can kind of see the way that he moves and the way that he kind of transitions on the ground. But you know, TJ has such a great wrestling game, and he's more positionally sound in the fact that he's less likely to be like in a funky extended position like Aljamain does, and Aljamain knows how to make it work for him. Well, I guess what I'm saying is that if you want to see somebody test Aljamain where I consider his strength, that would be his wrestling, his ground, TJ is the man to do that.
Go
ahead.
I was gonna say another potential option for Aljo would be perhaps Henry Cejudo. Let's hear what Aljo had to say about that.
Henry Cejudo also tweeted that he was getting back in the testing pool today after Is that a fight you would want to if he drops to 135 again?
I would love that. I think Henry's a tough competitor. He's a gamer. When the tough gets going, the same thing. He has that grit. He'll bite down on his mouthpiece and he'll throw some leather. And I feel like that would be the toughest matchup for me because he's actually a really good wrestler. So we would have to figure it out on the feet, and I think my length would be a problem for him because I'd be able to spam those front kicks right up the middle all night. You know, but if the Muppet want to come back and Triple C wants to get demoted to Double C, then we could do that, you know? So Henry Cejudo, get back in that pool and we could talk.
All right. You want to see that?
The appealing parts of this is the wrestling, because when you see a champion have a dominant strength somewhere, you know, it could be the opposites that attract or it could be samesies that attract. And in this, both TJ and Henry Cejudo have phenomenal wrestling. You know, TJ is a little bit more well-rounded, but Henry Cejudo is such a high-level wrestler. I mean, being an Olympian himself, he's been able to really dominate. So Certainly, yes. And I've wanted the, you know, to see Henry come back at 135. That's kind of what interests me the most. So I think either one of those could be very interesting fights.
Now, did you see this apology form that Aljo tweeted out? Did you see it?
I did.
To Aljamain Sterling from blank date, blank reason for behavior. The media convinced me he was done. Didn't watch the actual fights. Don't know MMA. I only looked at advanced analytics. I was jealous of Aljamain Sterling. Mercury was in retrograde. Or the final option, I will hereby respect Aljamain Sterling and will not talk down on the future first ballot Hall of Famer. I know that you said that sometimes his shit talking can be a little cringy, but I find that pretty funny.
This was a good one. Yeah, this one hit the nail on the head. I loved it. He's a funny guy. You know, I like Aljo. You know, he comes to the gym. He's a cool guy. You know, he's very talented. He works hard. And you know what? Everyone is out there trying to create something unique, something where the fans will be interested, because that's the expectation these days. It's not just about how you fight. It is expected that you're going to give the fans something more to care about than just your fights. Like, they want to be emotionally invested, whether they love you or they hate you. And each fighter is trying to find their way to get that, to garner that and get the paycheck. So I'm not going to knock the man. You know, he's doing his thing. And this apology form was actually really funny.
I like that he had that, like, had it all drummed up, ready to go, ready to tweet that out. Now, even though this fight was a split decision, do you think that Aljo has silenced doubters off of this performance on Saturday?
Never. The doubters are never going to be silenced. Come on.
They're never satisfied, those ghouls.
They're never satisfied. No, but I, in all seriousness, I certainly think he covered a lot of ground in showing such a much more competitive side. Whether you feel like he won the fight or you still feel like Piotr Jan won the fight, it doesn't matter, because Aljamain Sterling was 10 times the fighter that he was in the first fight. And that's what you really want to see, right? Those were the questions that needed to be answered. Yeah. So I feel like he covered a lot of ground as far as people doubting him. But of course, there's still going to be the naysayers. But hey, you know what? He is the reigning champion, reigning defending champion. So I'm sure he feels pretty damn good about that. And he probably ain't too worried about what the peasants have to say.
Hey, everybody, this is Lindsay Rhodes, and with the NFL playoffs underway, what better time than now to check out my podcast, The NFL Roadshow. We're going to break down the biggest games, key players, every angle in between, with guests that go past the low-hanging fruit and get to what you really need to know. We'll have new episodes every Monday and Thursday, all the way through Super Bowl 56 in my hometown of Los Angeles. So please subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts, or listen on the SXM app, included with most subscriptions.
We are joined currently by UFC commentator Paul Felder. Paul, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. What are, like, the days following calling a pay-per-view like for you? You, like, rest in your voice? You, like, regaining energy? What's happening in your world?
So I got back from Florida yesterday. Did a little workout, hung out with the family. Today, had to get right back up, get the daughter ready for school, walk the dogs, work out again. So, no.
Gotta go pretty sleep, though. Pretty pedestrian dad things. My guy, yeah. That's me too. Send me to bed early. I love that.
Yeah, 8:30, 8:30 easy.
One of my absolute favorite things while watching any UFC pay-per-view is watching the commentator cams. How aware of the cameras being there are you guys?
So it's a tiny little camera for the UFC, the way they do that. It's got a wide lens. It picks us up, you know, pretty easily, but it's really small. You almost completely forget that you're even being watched the whole time. And obviously the truck is looking for a crazy reaction. So they're also just making sure that they can see us and see that everything is good to go on their end for us. So they know when we have a crazy reaction. But, yeah, a lot of people are like, oh, they're forcing that. It's fake. I mean, if you're watching fights in your living room, I lose my mind if I'm watching fights with my friends too. So, I mean, I'm a professional fight watcher basically. So those are all real. You know, when you're next to Joe Rogan and you're watching fights, or you're next to DC, you're going to get animated and you're going to enjoy it.
But have you ever been caught doing something maybe you shouldn't be doing on those cams? So I used to be a commentator with WWE, and we also have those tiny little cams, but they feed right back to Vince McMahon so that he can talk to us. And I for sure have been caught either doing an eye roll or not paying attention. Have you ever been in a situation being caught on these cams doing something you're not supposed to?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that guys, you know, we probably get caught maybe tweeting, or and then they see the tweets on, but they can see us on our phone. They can see me getting pissed off or something like that. I have definitely gotten caught doing that and been warned, you know, nicely to just let that crap go. Don't let anybody's comments bother you during the broadcast. If you want to go and attack people after the fact, all day, no problem. Do that on your own time. Don't do it while, you know, because then it's true. It can affect how you're calling fights, and that, you know, these trolls shouldn't let them get in your head to the point where you're getting pissed off during a broadcast, and maybe you're not giving that fight that's going to happen next its due justice because you're mad at some random internet troll. So we've gotten in trouble for that kind of stuff.
It's really hard to stay off your phones during those moments. So, because you go to a video package, you have a commercial break, something like that. You kind of want to get that instant reaction. I know, I mean, at least in the world of WWE and like professional wrestling, a lot of wrestlers will go back to the locker room and look at their phone right away to get that instant reaction from their fight, from their match or whatever. Where I feel like doing commentary, kind of like, well, I kind of just nailed that call. Did anybody like that? Or is anyone talking a little shit about the call that I just made? It's really hard to, it's really hard to avoid that.
It is hard to avoid. And what I do is, you know, if my friends are messaging me or people I trust are literally texting me, when I get a break, I'll respond to that kind of stuff. And if it's, you know, if my buddies are asking me stuff about fights and what did I think of that fight, I will respond to that. But I will just evolve. Even Instagram is generally okay for me to see like cool videos or those shots where they get us catching ourselves reacting to a big finish in a fight. But I just try to avoid Twitter, unfortunately, because, you know, most of it is positive people saying good stuff about the call and, oh, I really like this crew if it's me and whoever I'm working with. But there's just way more people that are just on there solely to talk crap about people. So
I know, they're
that's
so
the only
rotten.
One I really, yeah, I just stay off of that. It's just too much negativity during the broadcast.
I was literally just scrolling through my phone during this and or during our last commercial break. Like, do you guys get hit with crazy messages like this too? It's hard to avoid them, but anyway, screw it. Who cares?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
We all do, right? Anybody, if you're in any sort of spotlight, you're gonna get people that go out of their way for no other reason than to just hate on you. And it's just, I read a quote. I forget where it was recently. I forget who said it, but it's like, is somebody that's more successful than you is not taking time out of their day to tell you how awful you are. It's only people. I would say 99% of the time, it's only people that aren't on the same level as you or don't think they can be on the same level. Because if you're 100%. Not on my level and you're working to get there, you're still not even going to go out of your way to talk trash because you know, so it's just people being, I hate to say it, probably get some backlash, but it's people being jealous.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I agree 100%.
And when you start to realize that, it's comedic and even sometimes a little bit comforting in the sense it's like, okay, I'm doing it right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's sometimes people out there that live to just harass you and it's not even just like the one time. Sometimes you get these people who are obsessed and they're like on each
thing.
Like Renee was saying, there was like some lady that's sure that you faked your pregnancy. Like what?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I have the child. My child's 10 months old. What are you talking about?
Who does that? You know, like I'm sure you've had some crazy situations where fans have gone off their rocker. Speaking of off the rocker, though, Paul, I don't know if you knew this, but last weekend in Oceanside, I was there.
Really?
Not doing what you were doing, you madman. the half Ironman, though, I had no idea that you were there. I would have loved to have cheered you on. No, we took a little family vacay. We got a new camper. And we went down to cheer on my strength and conditioning coach, who puts me through the absolute gauntlet. And so it was nice to see him suffer for a change. But a small world. Like I was on your Twitter. I was like, oh, my God, you were there in Oceanside as well. I definitely would have been cheering you along. But how the hell is it doing these? Have you done a full Ironman?
So I have not done a full yet. That was my my fifth 70.3, so the half Ironman distance. I've done a couple Olympic distances as well. So that was like my seventh or eighth race overall in like a year and a half.
Wow, I
became obsessed with that sport. It really is a great transition from somebody who's coming from MMA, where you know how it is. Our minds are focused. We have to be focused on so many things to be good at MMA, right? You can't just be like, no, I'm a world-class striker. I'll learn a little bit of takedown defense. Not in today's age. You've got to be obsessed with trying to better yourself, whether it's strength and conditioning, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, boxing, kickboxing, you know, footwork. There's always a million things to focus on. And when I started watching some of these pros and seeing how they do this, they're obsessed with doing the same thing, even though a lot of them, similar to us, have a specific strength where, okay, you're better on the bike, or you're a great swimmer, or you're a good runner, but you've still always got to be sharpening everything. And that was the first time I've gotten a race with the professionals on the same course at the same time. That was awesome, because there's guys and girls there that were, I mean, are pushing their limits every single time. And that was inspiring to see. I had a lot of fun there.
It was inspiring for me to see. I mean, I saw all walks of life out there, and I was like, oh, I think I might be getting a little bug here. I think I might have to try this one time. At least I just said I did it, you know? It's kind of one of those things. Like, someday I want to run a marathon someday, because I got to say, I've done it. And then this Ironman thing, I'm like, you know, there might be something here, which begs me to ask the question. I mean, is this... I think you kind of answered a little bit. You know, I don't think that I want to ask you if you're going to come back to MMA, because I feel like that's like beating a dead horse. You know, I think you would let the world know if that was on your agenda. But let me ask you this then, though. Does this kind of compensate for your competitive cravings? You know, do you still have that obviously drive and, desire to compete? And then, I mean, is this how it's transitioned, and like, where do you aspire to take it from here?
Yeah, no, those are all really good questions. And as far as the fighting, yeah, I mean, I really don't. But you know, of course people kind of take that with a grain of salt with me, because we've all done it, right? I even kind of retired and then came back.
Myself included.
Yeah. It's almost five years.
So I know it can happen. Yeah. It can definitely happen.
Exactly. So, I mean, as of right now, there's no real burning desire for me to get back in the octagon. And as far as this kind of covering that competitive edge, 100%. I mean, I train anywhere from 15 to 20 some hours a week for this stuff. I train like I am a pro, you know, because I've got the time and the schedule.
Yeah.
Got, you know, thank God, because of what I do, where I'm, you know, mainly working weekends, and it's in Vegas a lot of the time, where I can go and do all of these same things over there. I have a bike that I keep at the UFC PI. I've got pools that I swim in, and obviously you can run anywhere in the world. It doesn't matter, as long as you want to do it. And I want to win my age group. I want to become, you know, as close to the top of these races as I humanly can. I don't think it'll ever turn into a professional thing, just because of where I'm at age wise, and the guys that are at that level have been doing it and are so fast. It's mind blowing. Like, I did that race in 4 hours and 43 minutes on a really hard course in Oceanside, and the pros that won it, the top three guys all did it in like 3:45.
Whoa.
But they're running. I mean, these guys, like my friend Lionel, who came in second, he was one of the guys that was in that sprint finish at the very end for second and third. And they're running off of the bike, and it's a 56-mile bike, and there was over 2,000 feet of climbing on that particular course. And an ocean start for the swim, which is a pain in the ass if you've ever –
Yeah, they literally had to like swim out into the oncoming waves. Like, it was
just
crazy.
Soaked the rest of the time. Yeah, that's gnarly.
But yeah, so I mean, he was running, I think he ran like a 5:20 something per mile average for a half marathon. So I mean, it's like a 1:08
crazy
half marathon. And I did really well. I mean, I ran a 1:32, which is like a just around a 7-minute pace for 13 miles, which
That's fast.
Isn't a PR for
your
me.
Your time
as far
is
as
great. Your time is great, by the way. Very fast.
Yeah, it was good. It's good. But that's how competitive that particular race was, Misha, that there was, in my age group, that's the best guys in my age group are at that race. Like, that's one of the races that guys are really going to see, like, who's out there that's going to be at the championships. You kind of test yourself at this one. and I came in 21st out of like 300 guys, but that's how many guys are
impressive.
That fast. That the guys that won my age group did it in like 405. So I could be there within a year, I think.
Yeah.
Oh my, I would actually like to dedicate this whole interview to talking about this because I find it fascinating. But we do need to get into some UFC 273.
Let's do it. Yeah, of course.
What stood out to you the most from that? What did you think of the stoppage in the Volk Korean Zombie fight?
You know, so my brother messaged me after the fact, and he's like, early stoppage? And I don't think so. I was even saying that I thought that. And you know, this is some of the stuff I got slack for, that I'm kind of ruining the experience for these fans because I feel for these fighters. And we're here to watch blood and guts. I'm like, I know what these guys are going through. I know what that guy's head feels like today, you know? And I know that there's damn near no chance, unless he just lands a beautiful, perfectly timed right hand, that there's no way he's winning that fight in the next round or two. So I think that Herb had finally seen, I mean, Zombie's chin is just too damn good for his own good. You know what I mean? It got in his own way, where a lot of guys would have been knocked out by those shots that Volkanovski was landing. So I agree with that one. I think if you were there and you saw that face, and if you really saw his face between rounds, the demeanor that he had, he was sitting on the floor. He wasn't
kind
on
of
his stool.
Save him from himself kind of thing.
I think so. I really do.
Guys, we are joined by UFC commentator Paul Felder. Some of the split decisions that happened on this card, what did you think of the Jan Aljo fight and the split decision on that?
Yeah, I knew that one was probably going to go to split because I knew that first round was really going to be the one in question. And it's, you know, I think a lot of fighters are going to watch that and think, you got to be careful when you start a fight, even though it's a five-rounder. You've really got to try to solidify early. I think bagging that first round is pretty important in a championship fight because then you've got some slack, right? If you've at least really sealed that first round, and I thought that was the closest round to really judge, and I'd have to go back and watch it. In the moment, I thought it was really close, and I didn't think I was going to need to know, so I didn't take much stock in it. What did you guys think?
Well, I personally thought that Aljo won the fight. I thought it was 3-2. A couple things I took into consideration was, you know, who was maybe closer to, you know, being
finishing,
right? So I thought Aljo in the dominant positions. And then the fact that, you know, he was securing the takedowns, you know, you know, this isn't mine, and I don't want this to come out wrong, like I'm taking anything away from Jan, because, I mean, control is control, but when it's super narrow, you know, do the judges factor in somebody who is going for a takedown and is successful versus somebody who kind of happenstance to get there, you know, just based on, like, movement or, you know, the fact that Aljo gave up his back kind of for a situation? Like, does that matter when it's super close? I kind of wonder, and I kind of factored that in a little bit, and I also kind of factored in, you know, the fact that, you know, it was a good old adage, right? You got to beat the champ to be the champ. If it's super close, you got to assume that it's not enough to take a strap off someone's shoulder. And that's kind of how I felt. And I just thought I was okay with a 3-2 decision. I thought the first round was just a hair in Aljo's way, which surprised me, to be honest.
Yeah, me too. But I agree. I mean, I was not. I knew when I was going to a decision, I didn't know ahead of time. Like, normally, you know, we might hear in the truck once they get the official cards if it's going to be like a shocker. But I don't think anybody thought that. I mean, I know, you know, there was some things said, a post on who thought they were. But it was one of those fights that was so close. I don't think you can argue about that. And I thought he did enough to get that win. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with them giving that decision to Sterling. I thought the first round he was throwing a lot more. I know he was on his back foot, but I don't think it should matter. You know, the first people need to realize too at home that the first thing that the judges are told to look for is effective striking and grappling. Then octagon control and things like this. So I think a lot of people get confused. They see a guy marching forward. It's like, well, that's all well and good, but who is throwing the more effective strikes? And if you look at the stats, technically, Aljamain landed more strikes in that first round.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, that's a good point too, because sometimes being elusive is a strategy. Even if you want to take somebody down, sometimes backing up is the best way to get somebody to overcommit and overengage to try to hunt you down, right? And then you close the distance on a shot. So sometimes it's a strategy of how to get somebody to come to you. Because when somebody runs from you, it gets really difficult to get a hold of somebody if they really just want to be on their bike. Sometimes it can be challenging. So moving backwards is not always, you know, like that you're only being defensive. You know, it's mm-hmm. sometimes it's actually an offensive strategy to bait somebody in so that you have an easier time. They're helping you close distance, right? They're helping you by marching into you.
Yeah. If you can get them to be aggressive, to use feints and backing up to draw out big, powerful strikes. And let's be honest, Petr Yan fought a lot more aggressively in that early round than we've seen him in that first fight, where he really took stock, made notes, made adjustments as the fight went on and got better. He did the same thing against Corey Sandhagen. There was a lot of talk leading into this one. I think he was really pissed off at Sterling and really wanted to try to knock him out. And he fought a little bit like that early on. And Aljamain did a really good job throughout that fight of backing up, throwing a bunch of stuff, boxing with him just enough to then shoot. And was he successful on all those shots? No. But he did get those takedowns. And when he did, just like he said, he's going to have a hard time getting me off his back once I get there. That's what he did. Jan fought a little aggressive in that first round.
Just some of the with most that forward pressure. Back control I've ever seen. I don't know how he did that.
He's against, unreal against there.
Someone like Jan, who's so slippery and scrappy and scrambly. I don't know how he did that. That was impressive.
Yeah. Well, you're saying the same thing. I mean, there was a few times too where he was doing the right things and almost getting that arm under the chin. But Jan is, like you said, I mean, he's just so talented. And I have no doubt in my mind that that guy is going to end up finding himself right back in a title shot very, very soon.
Do you think that's what should be next then? Let's ask that. Let's pose that question. What is next for Al? What should be next? What do you want to see next for Aljo?
I mean, I would never mind seeing Petr Yan and him fight again. I mean, there's so much bad blood. There's so much trash talk that's going to go involved in it. I'd have no issues with that. But if UFC wants to put some new competition in there, I mean, you already saw that TJ Dillashaw was there. They were trash talking. There's going to be plenty of hype behind that one, too. Henry Cejudo has entered himself back into the USADA testing pool.
Yeah, he has.
So I think things are going to get real interesting at bantamweight. And I really don't see any of those fights being something that I'm not excited about. So I think it's really up to the brass and what they think is going to sell. And I think any of those three, or even anybody, I mean, Corey Sandhagen, if he gets a couple wins, love to see that guy get back in for a title fight. I mean, there's so many talented guys right now in that division. That's definitely become one of those weight classes in the UFC that's just always exciting.
Guys, we are joined by UFC commentator Paul Felder. Paul, I'm a huge fan of yours, and I love when you're on the call. What are some of the fights that you are proudest to have been on the mic for?
Well, one of them just happened on Saturday night. Gilbert Burns and Khamzat Chimaev is probably the most insane, awesome, fun experience I've ever had calling a fight. I mean, that was everything that I had hoped for in a matchup, right? When everybody asked me about 273, I was obviously excited for Volkanovski and Zombie. I'm a huge Zombie fan. And obviously, I like Aljamain Sterling, and I think Petr Yan's one of the baddest dudes on the planet. But that fight, everybody wanted answers to how good is Khamzat? Is he really all this and a bag of chips like we've been talking about?
Plus
is Gilbert
tax.
Burns big enough and strong enough to be able to give him a run for his money? And the answer is yes to all those things. I think Khamzat is all that. Maybe he's not yet the bag of chips quite yet, but Gilbert Burns is probably the baddest dude ever. I mean, that guy said, listen, he knew he was in for that kind of fight. And you could tell on the way he walked to the cage, the way he was taking those deep breaths. You know, Misha, you know what I'm talking about, that like, oh, here we go. This is going to be insane. And man, he almost got him out of there a couple times. He landed some big shots. That was a super close fight. Some people are still arguing today that it should have gone to Gilbert. I mean, I don't know. Again,
it was a lot of fun to watch.
So close.
But I think that if that fight happens, you know, out of 10 times, it's a coin flip, you know, who wins. It was, that was that good and that close. But we did get some questions answered. So that was the good part.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate you taking the time. Looking forward to seeing you on TV and hearing you on calls in the future.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me on, guys. Yeah. And anytime, just let me know.
We will. We certainly will. Throwing Down with Renee and Misha is part of the SiriusXM Podcast Network. The show is produced by Michael Russo and Kelly Murphy. Sound design by Nari Balin. Special thanks to SiriusXM Senior Vice President of Sports Programming and Podcasting, Steve Cohen, and SiriusXM Fight Nation Program Director, Marissa Rivas.
SiriusXM Podcasts.